what do Alan Pardew, Slaven Bilic and Sam Allardyce all have in common? None of them will be in the Reading dugout anytime soon because Jaap Stam has cemented his position as manager, and quite frankly, with 7 goals in 2 games, long live the Dutchman's reign. Boring, boring Reading, not anymore. Welcome to the Tireless Den Podcast, episode 143, with myself, Mark Mayer, as ever your host, and I'm joined by two returning faces who have come from quite afar to be here on episode 143. First, returning from the United States of America, it's Ben. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, good, thank you. I've flown all the way back just for you.
Thank you. And Johnny is also joining us as well, aka Angry Johnny. How's it going, mate?
All the way from West Reading.
All the way.
To Woodley.
Well,
I don't want to give away the locations specifically.
there are a lot of roadworks going on at the moment, to be honest, mate. So that's a lot of temporary traffic lights you pass through there.
There are, and you call us over in rush hour as well. I mean, well, yeah, commitment to the cause.
Just work, isn't it? So, as I say, welcome to the podcast, everyone. Thank you also to the Patreon campaigners that continue to invest in our little show. Anyone who wants the details of that, just simply Google the Tireless Den Patreon. And of course, keeping up with the website as well on thetirelessden.com and the Twitter and Facebook as well. If you feel any need to get in touch with us about the podcast or anything, feel free absolutely to do so. We'll kick on then, because it's been quite a good week in Reading Football Club history, and that's with the recap.
View from the Tireless Den.
Recapping this week's championship action.
So it's been a long time in Reading Football Club history, as I mentioned just then, since we last held a podcast. Anyway, I remember talking about, is Jaap Stam going to be here when we're in the next podcast? Who's the lineup going to be? How many Jaap Stam out chance are there going to be when we fall 3-0 down at home to Nottingham Forest? But none of that has happened, weirdly enough. And we're now sitting here off the back of 2 victories. We've beaten Nottingham Forest 3-1 at the Menzies Stadium, and then gone to Derby, who are in a cracking run of form, and as is the way with things, we're beating them 4-2. And I want to start by talking about John Swift, if that's okay, because mm-hmm. he was also someone who wasn't really featuring before we started, in our last show. Is he one of the players who is the, you know, integral feature in this turnaround, Johnny?
I think he definitely is, and I think what you saw in October was he had 2 performances. One where he only came on, I think, for half an hour against Sheffield United and changed the game there. And then against Nottingham Forest, he was instrumental, scoring 2 goals, scoring 2 absolutely cracking goals. Now, you can't give him all the credit for the goals. I think a lot of it has to go to the likes of Barrow and Bakuna as well. But you just see that when a fully fit John Swift is playing, we look infinitely more dangerous. And it's been really, really encouraging to see. And you sort of think, if that's what he can do in, well, 120 minutes on the pitch is potentially save Jaap Stam's job, then you just hope that he can stay fit and keep performing like that and the rest of the team around him for the rest of the season. Because we know what a quality player John Swift is on his day. I think, but since January, he's just been struggling a little bit with injuries. He hasn't been fully up to speed. He hasn't, he's probably just had 1 or 2 little knocks that have just knocked his confidence and knocked his ability to really do stuff. Whereas now that he seems to be back and fully firing, he's an integral part of the team, especially when we're going forward and attacking and looking as threatening as we are at the moment.
Yeah, how nice is it to have someone who can actually bomb on into the box, which I find is something. You would think, though, Ben, with players like Bakuna and Edwards, we should have been having that anyway, but Swift is kind of the player who's actually shown that it is possible and that we were lacking it so much.
Yeah, you're right. I think in recent weeks we've been crying out, someone's been wide, crossed it in, and there's no one there. So you always need those players running from midfield. And I think when he came in and started doing it, then the other two did as well. So he kind of got the ball rolling on that a bit more, as in he got in there, scored, and everyone else realised, right, you know, we should be piling into the box a bit more like this from deep. But also he's a killer pass kind of guy, isn't he? So when he's on form, this style of football relies on somebody playing that killer pass or taking a risk, playing one through. And recent weeks we've been happier to turn back, keep the ball and not play that ball. Whereas when he's confident like he is now, he can be that guy to thread it through or to make the run and be on the end of one. So delighted to see him back. Hopefully it'll continue.
Going back to going into that Forest game and the way that we sort of approached it, how would you say the atmosphere sort of felt before and after that game? Was it a sense of relief, or would you more put it down to a sort of everyone staying calm and not getting too carried away?
I think it was very much excitement. I think, I mean, there were the rumours going around beforehand that it might be the lowest crowd we'd seen in about 25 years or something, because it's a Tuesday night, we're not playing particularly well, who's going to want to, you know, come along and spend their evening doing that? And then at the end of the game, I thought that was, as much as anything, it was, oh, this is what you're capable of. We knew that these players were capable of this. It's just it hasn't happened for really as long as Jaap Stam has been the manager. We've got wins and we've ground out results and all this kind of stuff, but we've never really looked as exciting as that. And I think that was the main thing, was that you could really sense the fans were almost frustrated but also relieved, as if to say, oh, you can do this, oh, you can attack at pace, you've got pace on the wings, you've got pace up front, you've got trickery in midfield. And suddenly it seems like something has clicked in Jaap Stam's mind, that when you've got all these pacey players and these players who can play intricate passes, the way to do it is not to have a slow build up and try and find gaps in between a defence that's going to sit 15 yards away from their own goal. The way to do it is to invite them onto you and then hit them on the counter. And I think you saw that with, you've seen that with most of the goals we've scored over the last two games against Derby and against Nottingham Forest, is suddenly what we are doing is utilising that pace. And there's nothing more exciting, is there, in football than seeing a winger, or as in the case of Bakuna, seeing a fullback just absolutely bomb on and then put a brilliant ball into the box for someone else to finish. And it, you know, it was similar with Barrow's goal, the killer one up at Derby as well. It was just, you know, a pacey attack, and you really had your opposition on the ropes. And it seems like finally Jaap Stam has perhaps adapted his tactics a little bit to say, okay, maybe we just need to make that slight little adaptation. Obviously, he's not going to go away from his roots completely, but it seems to be for the good of the team. And with the results that have happened, you can't argue with it. And, you know, we're sitting here now, no one's calling for Stam's head.
No.
Certainly, are they?
And with the atmosphere as well, I mean, it helped that they scored early, didn't it? Because you had that kind of, that feeling in the air that if they'd started badly and gone one down, it could have gone horrible and been one of those days where the crowd get behind them and then, you know, they can't deal with that. But because they scored early, everyone got behind them and they started to play really well, and it just continued from there. So it shows what a difference an early goal makes, doesn't it? Because we've struggled with that.
And at the same at Derby, which is a game that I had a privilege of being at, just to segue a little bit here, there was, I think, 750 Reading fans at Derby, and there were 1,200 at Sheffield United. Obviously, Derby was £20. Sheffield United was free coach travel. And there were 400 at Leeds, which was about £75 for a ticket, as far as I understand it. Which, you know, it's almost as if there's some sort of correlation with that causation. Yeah, so the Derby game, it was another early goal, Liam Moore with the header that set us on our way, and then Aluko with sort of double whammy in the first half. And as you say about the atmosphere, I noticed the Derby fans were absolutely fuming with their team's inability to press us up early in that first half, and almost throughout the game, really. But the thing that I want to state first of all was, Derby is a team that we just absolutely love to beat in the sort of most hilarious of circumstances. Whether they're, you know, the worst team in history and we're going to beat them 4-0 in an attempt to save our skin, or if we're going to beat them 3-0 to deny them their God-given right to be in the playoffs, or, as it turned out, if they're going to just knock us the ball inside their own 18-yard box and Roy Behrens is going to stroll home and score. That third and fourth goal were goals that I just sort of, I didn't go mad as they went in. I just sort of enjoyed the moment and the sort of laughing at the home fans in a large sense. It's very unique and rare that you get that moment in football, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems we have a few bogey teams, but we seem to be theirs at the moment. So
yeah,
long may that continue. It's nice to have a team that you think, oh, I feel like we might win here.
Yeah.
Which I always do when we go there. So
we're too often the kind team that breaks other people's runs, aren't
we?
And it
definitely
was nice to have that shot on the other foot. As the Derby game started, then we had to mention the lineup quite quickly, because Omar Richards started at left back. His first league start for, I think, is general professional football, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then we had no striker again. Sam Smith was injured. John Daddy Bodvarsson also injured from having missed the week before as well. There's a sense that this lineup is still hard to predict, even if we are playing as we are. Is that because of injuries, or is this Jaap Stam sort of quirk that is remaining as we go on through the season?
I think mainly it is because of injuries. I think Jaap Stam possibly knows what his first 11 would be. I mean, if you look at the likes of longer term, you've got the likes of Abita out as well, which I think obviously is a big hindrance for him. And I think in a sense he's still trying to find out what his best 11 is. And then obviously when you're getting injuries on top of injuries, it's even harder to do that. I mean, we've seen Bakuna at left back, at right back in central midfield. We've seen Gunter at left back and right back. We've seen various different central midfield combinations. I mean, you know, Liam Kelly wasn't even playing on Tuesday night against Nottingham Forest. So, you know, that's another one where he'd picked up a little knock, so he couldn't even play him. So I think it is mainly the injuries. And I think in a sense, that's a good thing, because it allows Stam to experiment and just find. You never really know what you're going to find with a player until you put them on the pitch. And like I say, with the likes of Bakuna at left wing, and with Aluko and Barrow doing what they're doing in attacking ways at the moment, it seems as though he has finally found the formula.
Yeah, they look good at the moment. And just going back to Richards, he did incredibly well, I thought, on his debut, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a good, solid defender, but also a bit of flair going forward, which is nice. Similar to Obita, really, isn't he? He's that kind of player.
Yeah, so he's in that mould, definitely.
Fingers crossed that will carry on as well. It'd be nice to see him be involved more. He gives me seems more of a fullback than Blackett in my mind. So
yeah, I was going to say, it does say a lot for Tyler Blackett's sort of positioning within the squad at the moment. And then I think if you look at, once he came on up at Derby, they conceded, and he very possibly gave away another as well.
He's such a confidence player, isn't he? His head goes down so easy, and the crowd have picked him out a little bit for that. So, you know, it's easy to get on his back, I think. But yeah, good to have Richards there.
Yeah, well, I was a little surprised that he came on for the last 20 minutes at Derby, given that Richards, he, as you say, was good at attacking, but he wasn't, you know, running into the box at every opportunity. He was very disciplined, so I was quite surprised that he was taken off. I suppose Stan was just saying that, you know, you played well for 70 minutes, let's bank that, and then we'll go on from there. And it was interesting to see if he starts him against Wolves in just about 10 days' time. One thing that podcast listeners may remember, that Westy mentioned a group of fans who predict the lineup before each game, and they kind of put a quid in and everything, and it rolls over depending until someone wins it, basically. And Sasha from this group has got in touch with us and said that they tried it again for Derby, no one got it again, and that their prediction rollover is currently at £138, which, when they're only putting £1 in a time between six of you, that's quite a long time. And obviously these are Reading fans who are clued up in a good sense, so they should be able to get it, but it is an indictment of the situation in terms of the team selection.
Well, if you look at it the other way as well, the opposition don't know what we're doing either, so.
No, indeed. And Sam, it's partly injury that has played a massive part, I think, but he is also a look at the opposition and choose my team based on who we're playing manager, rather than come and beat my team. So that obviously plays a part. He switches people in and out for those reasons, on top of these injuries.
Yeah, we'll go through a couple of players then, just talking briefly about how they've been important to this sort of turnaround. The first one I think is worth talking about, Sonny Aluko, because he was sort of the nowhere man of the team for a good few weeks, being shifted around positions. But against Derby, he was skillful. There was attacking vision. He got the goal, obviously. Is this just a case of he's finally adapted to the team, or has his role changed, do you think, over the last few weeks?
I think it's possibly more a case of, you know, any time you join a new team, they need to learn your style. You need to learn their style. And I think you saw that with the goal that he scored up at Derby, with John Swift sort of playing that pass in behind. I don't think there's any other player in the team that could have played that pass, and I don't think there's any other player in the team that would have thought to make that run either. So it's just sort of about getting on the same wavelength. I mean, Aluko had a decent start to his Reading career. I think he picked up two or three assists in his first four games, although two of those were free kicks. But I think it's just been a case of the whole team hasn't been attacking well, and the whole team hasn't been playing well. And I guess when you've got the expectation on you of being a reported £7.5 million signing, I think a lot is expected of you, especially, you know, when you're by far our most expensive player in history, and possibly cost more than the rest of the entire squad. So I think he's getting there. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think he's shown these flashes throughout the season, and I've been thinking he's the sort of player that once he gets a goal, he'll get going. And hopefully that's the case. It seems like he's found his feet, like you were saying, and that link up with Swift definitely in both games seemed to be a really good sign.
Yeah, another new signing who has clicked into. We talk about finding his role. Leandro Bakuna has been given two different roles in the past few weeks and done both, you know, very well, I'd say. He's been great at right back against Leeds and Nottingham Forest, and he was at central defensive mid against Derby. And I just found it was so comfortable having him dropping back into the back line when he needed to. He could play the ball, he could put his physicality about. Is the fact that he can be a good central defensive midfielder just end Joey Vandenberg's argument to be in the team in general?
I think it ends a lot of our headaches. Possibly Yat Stam's headaches.
A lot of Vandenberg-induced headaches as well.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, yeah, we know what we're going to get with Joe Vandenberg. He'll be brilliant 1 second and pretty abysmal the next. Whereas I think Bakuna, I think the funniest thing for me about Bakuna is every time I mention Bakuna, I think I put out, I mean, he had an absolutely brilliant first half against Nottingham Forest, and he could have scored himself. Had a sort of long-range shot that swerved and the keeper just managed to get to. And I put a tweet out at half-time saying, Bakuna's first 45 might be the best I've seen of any Reading player in any game this season. And an Aston Villa fan replied to me saying, well, you can't be playing very well then. And I thought, well, we haven't been playing particularly well, yes. But I think it just sort of shows you that Bakuna really has been revived, because he was almost chased out of Aston Villa, and now that he's in this system, seems to be happy, seems to have a fresh start. He really seems to be taking his chance and wanting to impress on the field, and you can see that in his dynamism. He's always up and down the wings, or he's always chasing and harrying, and you know, sometimes a fresh start is what a player needs, and it seems like Bakuna has been completely revitalised by the move here.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems to be a bit of transfer business. It's finally going well for us, because that was certainly something we were questioning a few weeks ago. The Derby game also sort of hit me as, you know, we had a goal from the set piece. We had a goal after some intricate box work. We had some good old-fashioned luck. And then we had a counter, of which Mo Barrow could have scored twice before he eventually did. And it sort of shows that we have, you know, Liam Moore scored one. We had Aluko, Behrens, four different scorers. Is this variety that we're having at the moment in the scorers and also in our goals to a certain extent, do you think that that's something that's by design, or is that just sort of coincidence, whoever's getting there on the end of it is getting the goal sort of thing?
It's difficult to say. I think it must slightly be by design in that we don't really play a striker who's going to score all those goals, so you need the goals to come from other places. And it's good to score different types of goals, isn't it? A few weeks back, we were thinking, how are we going to score a goal? And now we're scoring, like you were just saying, free kick, on the counter, different styles of play working and getting the rub of the green. So I think they've just turned a corner in realising how they're going to get these goals, and it's brought their confidence back, that's for sure.
I've got two words for you. Total football. That's what it is. Yeah, that's the Stam's dream.
Yeah, the Dutch football's really in vogue at the moment. Everything's really, really good for Dutch football, isn't it? Speaking of which, before we go to news bites, is Jaap Stam safe from the sack?
I think he has to be. And like I said, I think these two games were just, this is what we're capable of. And as much as anything, like I said earlier, it seems to have been a turning point for Stam as well. Not only for the team, but for Stam. Not only for the results, but Jaap Stam as well. He seems to have given in a little bit to that stubbornness. If you said to a Reading fan, how would you describe Jaap Stam? Almost certainly in the first three words would have been stubborn, because we know that he has his style and he does not change it. And stubbornness has been the downfall of many a Reading manager here in the past. You think of the likes of Brendan Rodgers. You think even, you know, you could talk of the likes of Brian McDermott with some of their team selections.
Definitely.
And Jaap Stam seems to have just given in a little bit and just unleashed that pace and unleashed that counter-attacking ability that we have. And so I think for now we're willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, because we've seen the potential of this team. We know that these are good players. It's just now time to build on that and hopefully build on that confidence.
Yeah, he bought a lot of time last season, I think, for me, doing so well. And we mustn't forget he's still a new manager, isn't he? In his, not just at Reading, in his whole managerial career. So he's learning, and one of the processes of that learning seems to be, as you said, give up a little bit of that stubbornness and play with some freedom. But the other thing worth noting is the style of play the teams we were facing, because they came at us, didn't they? And that makes a difference, definitely, because there is space. I think the real test, so Wolves, you would imagine, would be a similar sort of game, whereas the real test will be Barnsley, perhaps, or somebody who's going to come and sit in, whether we revert back to not being able to get through or whether we attack them with the same pace and make those spaces. I'm looking forward to seeing that, really.
Absolutely. Well, we'll crack on then with the news bites with some news of new contracts and a worrying injury, perhaps.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right then, let's kick off with the good news. Jan Kermigan has signed a new deal. Firstly, who saw that coming? Because I definitely did not.
Nope. As far as everyone knew, no, he was going to swan off and become an investment banker or something.
I thought it was an interior designer.
Oh, is that actually?
Yeah, I think so. Oh,
okay.
He saw those two wins and thought, oh, we might go up now. I'd better hang around in case we can have a Premier League season.
He just wants to get his face off those sweep things on Sky Sports when they're just about to introduce something. That still breaks my heart cruel, every time I see it.
Jan Kermigan, for anyone who's missed it, I know it's a little bit of old news by the time we've come to record this, but he has signed a new 12-month extension to his contract and will be sticking around instead of retiring, as we thought. And he's kind of... the quotes that we've come out, it's kind of basically said that maybe if we'd have got promoted, he wouldn't have bothered signing a new contract. But as it is, he still fancies having another crack at the Premier League, which ideally would be next season. Someone who is rumoured, or was rumoured, and has probably quite quickly got this shut down, was Brian Tetherden, the Daily Mail, saying he was going off to Vitesse at Arnhem, which I don't think that would be a step up necessarily for him if he did go.
No, not particularly. I think probably a similar standard, I guess. But he's got a good partnership with Yap, I feel, and I don't know why he'd leave here at the moment, really.
Yeah, well, he's been linked with the Derby. He got linked with relatively recently. I think it would have to be to a Premier League team with a proper big budget to interest. I mean, at the end of the day, he's only a sporting director. He's not a star winger or a manager or anything like that. He's going to try and force a sideways move. In Tarlhurst End News, we've got the October Player of the Month competition up, which is your domain, Johnny, so I'll let you talk us through the candidates for that.
Yeah, the three nominees, Leandro Bacuna, Vito Minone, and John Swift. I can't remember who's winning at the moment. Is it Bacuna?
I think it's Bacuna and then okay. Swift.
Yeah, I mean, Swift. Remarkable that Swift is doing so well, seeing as, like I said earlier, he played 120 minutes in October and won two Man of the Match awards, so I guess you can see why. Minone had a really consistent month. I think he only kept one clean sheet, maybe, up at Leeds. But, you know, he pulled off some absolutely brilliant saves to keep us in games. And Bacuna, like I say, he's just been a real sort of electric ball of energy since he's come into the team. So,
yes, well, one person who we might not be seeing much energy out of in the... well, I guess it's 10 weeks, is it? Is Vito Minone is supposedly, I'm saying supposedly because this has come off the Twitter Rati, as they call it. Talk Reading has said that Vito Minone is out for 10 weeks with an injury. We don't know what his injury is. We don't know when it happened because he certainly finished the game at Derby. And I guess we don't know how or why either. So, I mean, us discussing this is...
good thing to talk about.
At least we know who.
We do know who. That's the only WH that we do know. This, assuming it's true, big blow or something that we can just kind of shrug off at this stage of the season?
I think it's difficult with our limited knowledge of Jäkälä, really, because I'm not sure how great he is.
He's a Finnish international.
Exactly. And I mean... it does worry me slightly because Minone has been playing well, especially in that Forest game. He made some great saves. That game could have easily been 3-3 if you to look back at the highlights. But I remember way back, well, like when Federici came in and we didn't really know much about him and he turned out to be a great keeper. So you never know what's on your bench, really. I'd be happy to see Jäkälä have a go.
I think the one thing that we always seem to have had in the last few years is a strong first-choice goalkeeper. And I mean, like you said, when Federici came in, we didn't really know too much about him. And I think similar with Alex McCarthy, he'd had a few loan spells elsewhere. But again, when you throw someone into the cut and thrust of Championship football, we never quite know how they're going to react. I think with Jäkälä, he's more of a known commodity in that he's not outstanding. I think he'll do a job, but I think to a certain extent, it might cost us a few points here and there. Because as well as his shot stopping, I think it's the whole thing about confidence with the back line and confidence with the whole team and
distribution,
whether he can play it out from the back quite as easily as well. So a little bit worried, like, because Minone had been playing extremely well.
Very well,
but I'm sure we'll struggle on through.
Yeah, I just have Stuart Taylor flashing up in my mind in big big lights there, which hopefully isn't the sort of case that Jäkälä wants to be. As it's the international break, I thought we'd just give a little bit of an update on the other Reading teams that are currently doing the rounds. And there's some cracking highlights going on in the other teams for Reading Football Club at the moment. Did you see Farah Williams score from kickoff?
Yes.
Yeah, brilliant. It was like school days, that was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's sort of like she is about to run up to it. She's playing Arsenal in the Conti Cup and running up to the ball. I think the Arsenal players who are near the ball are kind of like, well, hang on, she's just going to shoot here. And the only player who's not realised that is the goalkeeper, who is, you know, harmlessly sails over her head. And bish bash bosh, you got a viral hit on YouTube then, haven't you?
She scored another fantastic goal earlier in the season as well, sort of a volley that came down to her from from way up in the sky and just pinged it into the very top corner from 25 yards. So.
Yeah, she's a fantastic signing for the women's team, really. I think Arsenal's her old club as well, so it must have felt nice to...
Yeah, well, the women's team got two wins in the Conti Cup as it stands, last time I checked anyway. They've also won two and drawn one of their last three in the Super League. So there's a little bit of a relegation battle, I think, for them last year. Hopefully it'll be more mid-table security this year. Speaking of goals, and goals galore it was down in Gillingham in midweek as the under-23s or under-21s, whatever denomination plays in the Johnson's Paint trophy / EFL, whatever it's called. 7-5 was the score. They had two wins on the bounce going into this, and they are third in Premier League 2, which is the second division of the reserves. But, I mean, what on earth happened, as you guys understand it, for us to have that game?
Well, we were 1-0 down within 12 seconds, is that right?
I think so.
Yeah, I did see something else on Twitter. It's not verified, but there have been three instances of 7-5 in English professional football since
the war. Oh, God, we were involved in all of them, weren't we?
Not only were we involved, we lost all three.
Oh, yeah.
So clearly that score is something that's going to bug us for a very long time.
Yeah, well, I can, again, flashbacks of nights gone past certainly flashed through my mind. The under-18s are not doing so well, actually. They've only won once in their eight games of the Premier League under-18 season. They're 11th out of 12. Speaking sort of generally, I suppose, is the under-18s performance is... Would you almost prefer they do badly because it builds character? Or is this a sign they're not actually very good footballers?
I don't know. You can spin it either way. That's a bit of your journalism coming through. It doesn't bother me too much. They're still learning their trade, aren't they? It's better to just have them playing games. And I don't think you can read too much into it. I'm sure there's still some good players in there. And it's just a case of they'll win some.
I don't have much to add.
Well, in that case, if there's not much to add and there's not much news, because as I say, it's the international break, we'll crack on then with the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/ the Tarlhurst End.
Well, thank you for everyone who's got in touch this week. Surprisingly, not many of you feel there's much need when we've won. I suppose, all being said and done, that's all that matters, isn't it, really? So we'll crack on with a question that was on the Jan Kermigant contract situation, which is from Dan Blackman. He says, morning, guys, because he sent it in the morning, I presume. Obviously, great news that the big man has signed up for another year, as he is reaching legend status with some fans. But to put it on a slightly negative spin, for which he apologises for, do you still see us not signing another striker? The type of injury he had is that there is a chance that it will reoccur, especially a player whose game is focused on jumping and winning balls in the air. Surely the three-year plan of Tevreden isn't centralised around Kermigant, and if it is, I think that's pretty worrying. As always, loving the podcast and website. Thank you for that, Dan. Is Jan Kermigant sticking around, making it less likely that we'll sign a striker?
I don't think so, because, and just going off on a tangent, how many games has John Daddy Bob Varson played for us this season?
I'd be willing to say it's between 5 and 10.
He seems to just play a game and then get injured.
Yeah, not a full long run in the team, as he's always been in and out.
So I think I think we do need another striker. But I think in the case of Kermigant, I mean, obviously I don't know him personally, but he seems like the 100% model professional. And so we were just talking about the under-18s. If you can get him to, you know, have a quick word with them, teach them a few moves, that sort of stuff, just, you know, giving them a little bit of a G'ing up, and just, I think, just having him around the place as that experienced head, that really good influence on everyone. I think, as much as anything, his influence off the pitch will be what's most important over the next couple of years. I think, obviously, they're not going to be looking for him to sort of play until he's 40. Just keep offering him new one-year deals. Please, Jan, we still need
you'll make
you.
It to the Premier League one day.
when he's sort of 45 and, But no, I think it's a good thing that he's staying on for another year, because I think he's such good influence on the players.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's all about his presence, isn't it? He's been promoted as well, which helps. He's got that experience, and he just seems like an all-round good guy to sort of G everyone up, doesn't he? Because he's such a hard worker too on the pitch. You know, he's the best defender as well, isn't he? So I'm sure they'll still be looking for a striker. Stam didn't shy away from the fact that they were for the whole transfer window, and I'm sure it'll be the same again in January. It's just whether anyone will give us one that's good enough. You know, they all know that we're after one that racks up the price, and it's what they're willing to pay. But we might be top by then.
Yeah, everyone would want to sign for us.
Really? To be fair, we're only 6 points off the playoffs now.
Yeah, if people are worried that we could go down, we're only six off the bottom three, so yeah, it's the same, isn't it?
It's just crazy to think. I mean, you know, the cliche is the championship's a tight league every year, but suddenly two wins and you're 6 points off the playoffs, and yet you're still, what, 19th?
Kind of game in hand.
20th, yeah, game in hand as well.
We're getting carried away, I think.
Right, everyone run to the bookies. Gamble away.
I'll start the podcast with E-I-E-I-E-I-E. Yeah, on Kermigan, you get him on the Football Manager tutoring then. You'd say, go on, take Sam Smith under your wing.
Definitely.
Well, there was an interview with him, wasn't there, saying how great he thinks Sam Smith has been. So there's definitely, as much as we joke, there's definitely some of that going on behind the scenes. So.
Well, we'll see how that one goes then. Alan has asked us, what do you think have been the main reasons behind the significant change in fortunes over the last couple of games? And I suppose we've discussed that, but what I want to focus on is he asked, can we sustain it? Is this that we've seen so many Reading teams in the past that have started really well. I remember when Norwood came into the team under Adkins, and you know, we've had Guthrie as well in that championship season, who had a good like 4 or 5 week period around November, December, and then they got found out by the other championship teams. You know, they got double marked or something. Is that viable to happen with this team, that other teams work us out?
I think to a certain extent, what, you know, what Ben said earlier about teams coming onto us and there being opportunities to counter. I think certainly teams will give us less opportunities, but at the same time, when you've got such sort of devastating pace in attack, there's always going to be opportunities to do this. And I think as long as Stam sort of sees, you know, the way to a result isn't just to grind the opposition into submission, but to use your talents and your attributes to the maximum, then I think there's no reason why we can't sustain this. I mean, you look at the sides in the past that have played pretty similar football for an entire season and they've gone up. I mean, well, I'll happily hark back to the 106 side. That team barely changed throughout the entire season, and yet no one figured out a way to stop them. So I think there's no perfect formula, but at the same time, I think Stam has sort of found a formula that's working on at the moment, and hopefully it can keep working, yeah.
Yeah, I'd imagine they can be sustainable, at least more competitive than they were on that run of 5 or 6 games, which were really bad. I think they'll definitely, well, definitely is a strong word. I think I hope that they'll carry on in this vein. I'm not saying they're going to go and smash Wolves and win every week, but I feel like they're going to be in games more and getting more goals now. So that's a positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Scott from the States has predicted that there's less bulge in the mail sack, so here's his contribution. He said there's 6 players have started all 3 wins over Derby, Forest and Leeds, those being Manone, who, you know, might not be starting many games in the future, Liam Moore, Chris Gunter, Leander Bakuna, Dave Edwards and Sonny Aluko. He asked, do you think that this is the start of a more stable starting 11 for Stam? He would add Swift, Barrow and a healthy striker into that and start those 9 in every league game moving forward. Ben, is this sort of a thing of Yap Stam is comfortable with these players for the rest of the season, or do you still think that he's looking at, I don't know, maybe a new wing back or maybe a new striker or centre back to come in? And do you think that he'll end up wanting to move on someone like Edwards and get him as a fringe player more than a starting player?
Knowing what we know of Stam, I think probably he seems to like to change the squad around and always find that better player. But the fact that they did start both those games, and I imagine lots of those will be involved against Wolves, they've kind of earned their place, haven't they? You can understand changing the team more when you're not playing very well, but once you find something that clicks, I think it's good to try and bottle that and stick with it. So I'd be very happy if much of the spine of the team stays the same consistently, again, injuries permitting.
Well, as Jolly said, the 106 team is an example to follow as to why we don't need to change the team too much. Neil has asked, following 2 consecutive wins and improved performances, has the international break come at a good or bad time?
I think a bad time.
See, I'd say good. I'd say good because we can just sit on this now, and obviously, this, you know, we're not in the playoffs or the season isn't over, but we can just enjoy the moment a little bit more.
What, before it inevitably all falls apart? Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, no, more or less.
Yeah. We've got 2 weeks to enjoy this rather than 3 days.
Because on Saturday it's going to be 4-0 against Wolves and we're all going to be shouting Stam out again. No, I just think that you know, the championship does take it out of you a lot, and that momentum, while valuable, isn't the be all and end all, and confidence is, in fact, more important.
Yeah, no, I just think that, you know, especially in a league where momentum can be so important, and we know how important momentum is in football, to get these two wins, you know, the two biggest wins of the season, score 7 goals, and then suddenly it's just you go away for 2 weeks. Obviously, the Mainoni injury could have happened at any time, but it seems to have happened now. I just think that, you know, it would have been good to carry that on and to really sort of go into the Wolves game off the back of a really good week of training, off the back of two really good victories, and just say, right, let's go for it. Whereas I think when you get some players going away, it sort of takes away a little bit of that. You don't know if you're going to get any injuries from there. So, I mean, you know, I think you can't really complain too much about it coming at a bad time, because I think when you come off the back of two wins, there's not really a bad time for anything. So
no, hopefully that confidence hangs around for a bit longer with two wins. I think it'd be worse, you know, if we were on that run we were on before them and we'd lost those two games, and then you had an international break to stew on it all. It would have been horrible. We'd have been moaning on this podcast.
Potentially we'd have had a new manager, to be
exactly,
honest.
Exactly, well, yeah. So I think one thing it does is it gives some people a chance to recover. I don't know how long the injury list is. They seem to have a whole squad out all the time. So hopefully some of those will be back for the Wolves game.
Yeah, hopefully. And Dave Stevens has said, which goal wins? Is Swift's second against Forest, the one he sort of scrambled home at the far post better, or is the better goal a Lukos versus Derby? I'm going to go with the
second v Forest, the one he dinked over. Oh no, that was Barrow who did that, was that?
Yeah, Barrow flicked it over the top, didn't he? Okay. And then Swift tucked it home. Okay. It was a lovely flick from Barrow.
That was. I'd go for Swift first against Forest.
I thought that was the better goal as well, actually. That was a nicer finish.
Yeah, and there was a nice little sort of interplay in the midfield. Bakuna slamming it upfield, and then
he's acting this out as we.
I've got my little Sabutio figures on the table.
I'd go a Luko derby, I think. A lovely 1-2, and that's what we bought him for, that little jink between two or three players, and then just absolutely smash it home from that position. That's what you need to do. And
yeah, a bit of unpredictability,
yeah,
I'd say.
Even though I knew who was going to do that. But yeah, it's
everyone will now. That's the problem. Roy Dupuis, to end on, I suppose it's got a good one to end on in a sense. It brings us back down to a nice level, I'd say, is that even though the Derby game was such a good win, should it not worry us on how they scored from very simple errors? And I suppose my answer to that is that yes, it should worry us, and that's why we shouldn't get carried away, and that in itself isn't a bad thing.
I mean, it's always tough to say, because I don't know. I mean, we were 3-0 up at the time of Mainoni's little meltdown, and you know, if it was 1-0 or 2-0, I don't think he'd have made that pass. I think it was just almost a little bit of complacency mentally from the players, thinking, oh, you know, we've got this wrapped up. And so, you know, similar with the fourth one as well, where I think, again, it's Blackett who just loses his man down the wing and the cross comes in. So I think in a sense, you can't worry about them too much, because I think there were some mitigating circumstances.
I think that second goal was a bit of a strange situation anyway, because it's just been announced there was 7 minutes of added on time. And I think that kind of threw our players, and it sort of made them, Derby, very briefly think that they might actually be able to get something. And they kind of threw everyone forward, and, you know, Martin is unmarked and it's a good finish, but it's not, as I say, I sort of agree that it's a goal that came out of the circumstances more than the poorness of our players, as it
were.
Yeah,
and we mustn't forget they're a good team. And they were on a good run.
Yeah.
And they were at home.
7 unbeaten.
So, yeah.
They were the top form side going into the game.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd be always point more to, well, at least we're scoring goals now. So,
well, scoring goals is something that we'll definitely need to do on Saturday, because it's Wolves at home. And we'll be previewing that in Any Other Business in 2 seconds.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Back to the Imadeski Stadium then for Holland versus Portugal. Yes, it is Jaapstam Reading versus Wolverhampton Wanderers, aka Jorge Mendes United. And, well, it's certainly Portugal that have started the season a little bit better, hasn't it? Diego Jota, Ruben Neves, plenty of Iberian talent in that Wolves team. All, I'm sure, have a great connection with the Black Country before they came and penned their good multi-million pound deals to stay at Molineux. But there is one man missing from this game who I think will start on, and that's Barry Douglas, is suspended. Now, Barry Douglas is a Scottish left-back you may not have heard of, but he's got 6 assists for Wolves this season and is quite the important player. We talked about the international break. Is this a good time to be playing Wolves?
Yes, very important. Very, very good time to be playing Wolves. Those 6 assists, but I think at least 5 of them are from free kicks or corners.
Both were against Fulham on the Friday night.
Yeah, so those are where he does his damage. And also, I think, I'm not saying Wolves are overrated, because I think that would be a flaming hot take. But I think also Wolves have scored sort of 8 or 9 of their goals from corners or free kicks. And I mean, at any level, that is a rate that is unsustainable. So I think if we can start to turn the tide, do a bit of, you know, set piece defending, and obviously they won't have their best set piece taker on the field, then I think there's no reason why we can't get a result here.
I'm not going into it dreading it, which is a nice feeling to have, isn't it? I think last season we just used to win at home all the time, and you turn up and think, oh, you fancy us to win today, even without playing well. And after beating Forest and getting that win at Derby, I'm not thinking, oh no, this is going to be a hard game, we're going to have to sit through them battering us. I'm thinking we could give them a game here. So I think that's a good position to be in, and I'd fancy our chances.
And I did watch them against Fulham, and you know, like you mentioned, it was 2-0, but 2 of the goals were from set pieces, and Fulham had a few chances to at least get one back or equalise. They wouldn't, you know, Wolves didn't look, it didn't look like a comfortable 2-0 win for them. So maybe this is just me filling myself with false hope.
Well, they do have the league's top scorer in Leo Bonatini, who I believe is pretty much their only striker. They've sort of come into the season with just the one man, and he's fit, so I suppose it's kind of irrelevant. But they have lost QPR recently. They're the joint highest scorers on the road, having 1-5, drawn 1 and lost 2. Would you say that, firstly, are they promotion favourites? But more importantly, does beating Wolves make Reading genuine playoff contenders once again?
I think if you look at how they've started the season, then I'd say yes. I mean, if we did beat Wolves, people would be thinking, hang on, we could get in the top 2, I'd imagine. So it's important not to get carried away, but I think if you do pick up those points against them, you're definitely giving yourself some credence and legitimizing that idea that we might get to the playoffs.
So you're settling for a point then, Johnny?
I'd be very, very happy with a point.
I would too, yeah.
As long as we play as we have done over the last couple of games, and we don't sort of sneak a lucky point. I mean, it might be a sort of situation where Wolves do come and blitz us and we do have to ride our luck a little bit. But hopefully, like you say, that confidence over the last 2 games that we can score at any moment can carry through, and hopefully we'll be able to get something positive out of the game.
Yeah, well, it'll be an interesting moment to come out of that game, because afterwards we go straight, on the Tuesday night, we go straight to Bolton Wanderers away, who have started the season abysmally, but have picked up a lot of points recently, certainly a lot of draws. And then we face Sheffield Wednesday at home, and that in itself is never a good, never an easy game, should I say, unless, of course, it was when we beat them 6-0 back in, like, 2011, whenever it was. Bolton, is it dodgy going to Bolton expecting to win, or should we be doing that?
Well, they could be the giant killers. I mean, they got Grayson the sack from Sunderland, didn't they?
Yeah.
So a couple bad results here, and could be.
I think that's a difficult one, because as we were saying before, it depends on how they set up, doesn't it? Wolves game, you say that how many they score on the road, then you expect them to come at us, and we can, you know, counter back at that. Whereas Bolton, I'm not sure how they would approach the game against us. They've also got former players, so there's goals there, isn't there? Yeah, Lafondre and
Karajan. That's at least 2 apiece, isn't it? That's a 4-0 defeat in itself, isn't it?
And Parky as well, so
he's going to sub himself on, just grab a quick one, yeah.
That's a difficult game. I wouldn't just write them off because they're Bolton.
Mm. No. But I think at the same time, if you're not beating them, then...
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's a double-edged sword in a large sense, isn't it? You can't be beaten, but you can't not win, if you know what I mean.
You could draw. No, but then you don't win.
Then you're not winning. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard when you draw, because you don't win.
It depends on the Wolves game as well, really, doesn't it? It's hard to talk about it now, really, if they go and beat Wolves.
If we lose to Wolves, then a point away at Bolton's probably a good settler, as it were. Or obviously a win would help in any circumstance. Prediction league, I'm going to get a preliminary prediction from you here, Johnny, for the prediction league for the Wolves game, because it is, you know, still over a week away. You've slipped off the lead, though. You're on 7 points with Handbags at the moment. Westie's lingering on 6 at the bottom. But having predicted a... we all predicted a loss for Derby, or draw. None of us got that right. Myself, Wim and Tom all got a win for Forest, though. So we all picked up a point off that. We were top on 8, which isn't bad considering I was bottom about 3 weeks ago. So I'm quite happy with that. I'm going to initially say it's going to be a 2-2 draw against Wolves.
I'm not going to make up any ground on you like that, am I? I was going to go for a 2-2 draw. I'll go for a 3-2 defeat.
Ben, what do you reckon?
I'd 1-0 Reading. I think they're going to grind it out, and it'll be it won't be the free-flowing game that you two are expecting.
Well, yeah, I am expecting goals.
I think it'll be back to the wall, both teams for a while, and we'll maybe Kermigan will come on and get that winner near the end.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he starts against Wolves on Saturday week then. We'll finish off with just going through the internationals. Of course, they've basically already started by the time you're listening to this, but just a quick rundown of what's going on. Paul McShane is back in the Ireland squad as they face Denmark on the 11th and 14th for the World Cup playoffs. Let's hope he doesn't witness any handballs right in front of him from famous Arsenal strikers to be buried in the back of the net like he did last World Cup playoff that he was involved in. Chris Gunter and Dave Edwards play France and Panama, which is your pretty standard set of friendlies. Two teams that go into the World Cup, Wales not being one of them. Barrow is playing with Gambia. Jarkola, as you're saying, playing with Finland. Jack Nolan has been called up to the England under 17 team. Axel Andersson, the centre back, is playing with Iceland under 21s. And Jordan Holsgrove is with the Scotland under 19s. Isn't it nice? I'll finish on a positive question. And isn't it nice that we've got another academy player featuring for England who, I presume, win every World Cup from now on?
Yes.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. It's nice to be represented.
Have we ever had a World Cup winner whilst playing for us?
Not whilst playing for us, I don't think so, no.
Well, give it, 8 years?
No, Iceland will win and...
Yeah, that's true.
Right, yeah, John Daddy will lead Iceland to Russian glory. And on
if,
that
if
note,
he stays fit.
Yeah, well, he'll play in a quarterfinal and then he'll miss the semi playing the final. It'll be every other game we'll play.
Yeah, he can get himself up for a World Cup final, but he can't get himself up for a trip to Derby. Can't
he'll be riding high on our promotion then.
Priorities.
So, and then we'll sell him for 25 million quid. It all sounds so easy. And on that note then, I thank everyone for getting to the end of the podcast and listening to episode 143 of the Tarleton podcast. We will be back at some point. I can't really tell you when, because it was obviously the Bolton game on the Tuesday. It'll be unlikely that we'll record anything on the Tuesday, so we'll try and make it the Monday or Wednesday after the weekend. For now though, enjoy the international break, enjoy the time off that Reading have afforded us with 2 wins on the bounce, and nothing left to say but come on you Arse. You smile.